Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello, beautiful people. How are you doing? I'm going to pause. I feel like I should pause just long enough for everyone to answer. And they go, oh, that's great. That's great.
Well, that's a discussion too for after things about the whole, when people address a group as a group and not as individuals, you know, like when you're at Disneyland and you're like, you go, there's a crowd and they get in back of the crowd and like, everybody move up, move to the front. And they're yelling at the people at the back of the crowd to move up.
Yeah.
You know, and like they can't like do I trample this person in front of me? Because that's what you're telling me to do. If you want us to move forward, maybe go to the front of the line where everybody's standing with a 30-foot gap and tell them to come towards you.
Right.
But it's that I told the crowd to move kind of mentality. Speaking of crowds, Justin Robert Young.
The one man crowd. Justin Robert Young. I'm here. Hi, friends.
And our producer, Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hi, everybody.
But yeah, when you go into an audience like, hey, how's everybody doing? You're sitting like,
nobody knows what to like. Yeah. That's one of my favorite moments. I did my full stage show a couple days ago. And everything is call and response. And then I just get to this moment. And I go, are you ready? And then it's just dead silent. And there's always like one or two people that go, yeah. And then which tickles me every single time.
Oh, people in mass crowd psychology. Gentlemen, how prepared are you for the future?
Does the future involve cardiovascular exercise of any type?
Possibly.
Oh, well, then I'm going to say less prepared than I would like to be.
Or possibly a pill that you just take that, you know, compensates for that, which they're working on.
Oh, right. Man, now I'm in. Now you got me.
You know, we talk a lot about like, hey, robots, machines, it's awesome, kind of scary, and they're getting smart, and they're doing smart things, and yay, it's kind of cool. A little nervous, but maybe don't need to be, but maybe we should be, but here come all these awesome things too. And I think we're entering into the age of sort of AI data. And what I mean by that is that we're seeing now, particularly like Google has a company called Verily. And there's other companies that are using AI and machine learning and stuff to take large data sets and look for correlations, test those correlations, and then come up with results. Basically taking what could take a scientist 10 years, you could do in a couple minutes. And I've saw stuff like 5-6 years ago where they looked at like fruit fly DNA with fruit flies that were extremely long lived compared to the ones that weren't. And it said, oh, there's this little gene that affects resveratrol. And no AI, nobody told the AI, oh yeah, we know that's, you know, associated long, you know, old age. It figured it out on its own, which was something that took us.
There is a fascinating discussion on Sam Harris's podcast, over 2 hours long, with an expert. And one of the things they talked about is, they took the same algorithm that beat humans at Go, and rather than teach, and they stripped away all of the preconceived notions, like a lot of those chess programs or Go programs, you get to rely on book moves and mm-hmm. you get to rely upon all the humans that helped. The second version, they told it nothing. They told it nothing except for the rules of the game, and then it just figured out the best way to play by trying everything.
Yeah, it's absolutely kind of it's eerie. And I'm getting to a story here, but like I've been playing over the weekend. I've been playing with in Apple and iOS. They have a thing called Core ML, which is core machine learning, which means that with a few lines of code, you can take a model that you've programmed to do something. Like I could say, oh, I want something that's going to you could use for vision to say I want to spot certain things. Like if I want to go out into nature and spot certain birds or stuff, identify that. I literally just take a folder full of like 100 images of the bird I'm looking for and 100 images of birds I'm not looking for, you know, that's not the bird. And it'll go through that, develops an algorithm and a little model. You plug that in there, the few lines of code, tie it into the camera, and it'll go, seagull, not, or, you know, identify whatever. You can grab databases. Like I have stuff in here. Like I'll show you. Actually, I'll show you just as a quick demo, because this is it's getting somewhere. I downloaded one called YOLO, which is a algorithm that does a really, really fast look. And it's not going to mean as much when you see this, but if you look at the it's rapidly in real time identifying whatever's in front of it. Okay.
Oh, that's amazing. So, does it actually text? Is that text words that we're just not able to make out there?
Yeah, there's text up there. It's got a few things there. So there's a great demonstration. If you look at YOLO recognition, the trailer for it is they put it in. There you go. James Bond movie. Bryce, you're amazing.
Oh, watch wow. And this. It's just telling you everything. Like, this is an orange. That's a handgun. This is a hero yeah. person.
So also, like, umbrella, each individual person, chair, motorbike. Like,
this is real time. They're playing a clip from Spectre. So, like, you're watching this action sequence as it's just rapidly just telling you every single thing in there.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And it's running off of, you can do this demo off of, you know, a phone.
All right. What is this called?
This is YOLO. This is a particular image recognition database. It's optimized for being super, super fast.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing.
That is, I mean, it's just also crazy to look at, like, all the data and even to understand how fast our brains process.
Yeah.
All
right? It's just calling out what we do naturally by saying, hey, this is what your brain does all the time at all time.
A billion years of evolution behind it.
Yeah. Wow.
Because it's like it's while we're watching this, and if you're only listening on audio, it's you know, a big action sequence in crowded marketplaces and streets in Spectre.
It did miss some. In this case, we see a woman behind the wheel of a car, and it misidentifies the top of the steering wheel as Frisbee.
Well, okay. Well, just to say, when you say misidentified, remember that this is – and yes, and it has a database of, let's say, 1,000 objects or – there may not be steering wheel in the database.
Got
too.
It.
You know? Yeah. And so it's kind of like – it's sort of like – it's like it has a limited vocabulary, and it's going, I guess it's this – because yeah, I don't have a word for this other thing, and this has a certain probability of being this thing. So you can adjust the confidence and say, only tell me if you're like 95% or more confident.
But also just think about how each and every one of those things that are identified are mm-hmm. crucial to that scene, right? It's not the same scene if we do not recognize that there are people that James Bond is chasing down the bad guy in. Right. Like we don't it's not the same scene if we don't realize that his accomplice is driving the wrong way up a road where cars are coming.
Yeah,
at her,
we have right? context. It doesn't. It has no context. You know, we know it's a car and, you know, yeah. you could think it's, hey, it's a Frisbee factory. Why are you yelling at me, Brian? I'm doing my best.
You always make fun of me.
They shot that scene in a Frisbee factory.
it turns out that maybe I'll bet you could easily program this to take all the second place items. So to teach you how to swede each of these scenes, like if you want to recreate it, you know, it's like, okay, you don't have a person, put a dog there. You don't have a steering wheel, put a Frisbee there. And then, you know, you recreate right. it.
Yeah, every the second guess YOLO.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. it's amazing to see where this stuff. And like I said, I've been playing with stuff, and I'll show you guys some of the things I've been working on. It just blows my mind because that I'm able to do this, that I'm able to go, you know, like, well, I'm making things on the webs, you know. Well, actually, it's all not a web based. But anyway, my point is. Incredible technology now. And now if you want to create like image recognition systems and stuff, you can take large databases, upload them to Google or Amazon, and they'll create these. They'll use their GPUs to go through all these different permutations and come back with. And you're creating a neural net is what you're creating.
Man, that really tells me that, you know, remember when Google Glass came out, what we mm-hmm. wanted was the ability to have it instantly recognize faces and a heads up display reminding us of who their name is or what, you know, what to talk about. Basically, like to have a congressional aide in our glasses at all times, reminding us of what's going on. That technology is here. I mean, it's going to be 20 minutes till somebody puts that together.
No, there's a demo. There's already a demo. I played with them last night. If you look up iOS Core ML face detection real time, And what it does is you put in, it has a list of your faces, and then it pops up and it shows, it'll be like Brian. It shows a little icon. This is Brian. You look around the room in real time. It's just popping over the icons for every person you look at.
That's so awesome.
I don't want to get derailed, but can we just for one second, just bring up that Google Glass thing. It just always, what fraudulence, you know?
Oh, yeah. Compared to what the thing was?
Out and out. Watching. Fraud this was.
The demo shows you the point of view of a person, and it, over the things are overlaid over what you're seeing directly in front of you, okay? And, you know, that's exciting and looks really, really cool. But the reality of it is, as Justin will explain, thing in the upper tiny corner. Tell them about your experience while I grab a demo.
Oh, God. Well, yeah, I had them. I think I still have them somewhere. But, no, it's a it was a black and white little screen that just kind of was always black and white and was always definitely just in your upper peripheral vision that was basically just – a tiny black and white Google alert flashing. Like there was nothing that was changed by what you were seeing. It was sure. I guess it was dependent on location, but nothing like what we are seeing.
And I mean, it just really, it, you know, nobody wants to look like an idiot. So
yeah, exactly.
What I have here is the ViewFind, which is just a $200 basically little mini heads-up display that plugs into an HDMI port. In this case, you can put it into your iPhone or whatever. But I'm using that for something else. But that's kind of neat. Now, if you want to play with that kind of stuff, though, if you want to walk along and watch a movie in, out of your right eye, it's like I don't – dorky – no coming back.
I mean, yes, but in, you know, if you're on the factory floor, I could totally see that. Oh, yeah. If you're surgeon, no. I could totally see that.
By the way, Google Glass lives on as an enterprise device. Like there is a use for that kind of heads up display when you are at the job and you are otherwise wearing like a jumpsuit and you know
what else? I think there was a version, a competing one, that was designed for cyclists, so that you had your heads up display.
It had a really tight. It only like showed you a certain amount of data though. That was a disappointment.
Let me ask you this though. It's like because this kind of AR, like what you're showing now, the possibilities. I mean, like this kind of tech really only requires to be dressed up a certain way to be a killer app, right? Like when you are able to recognize certain things. I mean, hell, how much? I mean, let's take Brian's idea for Google Glass. You can use exactly that framework, feed in your Facebook feed of faces that you know, faces that are famous or stuff like that, and put that in a device that doesn't make you look like a Borg headed to a key party, like the Google Glass looked like, and you're good to go.
Yeah, man. I'll tell you what, and we've talked about this before, but it's like right now we're seeing the wave of, you know, we were all worried about getting chipped or ID'd or barcoded in the future, and now our faces are our barcodes, and
you don't need it. Yeah, like yeah, why bother?
You can't hold anything secret unless you wear, you know, a hilarious comical mask. Or even then, you know, if you have the right glasses on, you can recognize right through it. And yes. So the second wave is all of the vast amounts of useless video that everything has been recording for the past 30 years. All of a sudden, you could retro apply all that stuff and say you could map out someone's last 20 years based on available video and AIs that just say, you know, find anything literally anywhere that ever had Brian in it, and then and here's his life.
It's scary to a degree because you look at like. In what I've been playing with the tech, its ability to recognize stuff. And there's, you can look on GitHub and you'll find tons. GitHub's a place to find like open source projects anybody can download and tinker with. And you can find a lot of stuff like here's an algorithm that like tries to recognize what exercise you're doing at a certain point. And if you wanted to start, and there's like things like real time, you know, license plate scanners, you can put on your phone, pull it up, get every license plate on the street. It is, and you can combine that stuff too with like, forget taking your Facebook stuff. You could do a scan of faces all around you. iOS has built-in face detection, do image comparisons.
Well, and I think I had pitched to you like 2 or 3 years ago the idea, because it's a problem that a lot of people, you know, if you're a cyclist, a lot of people don't know that you have to maintain 3 feet distance, 6 feet if you're in a truck or whatever. And it would be trivial to put together a device that basically was able to tell which cars were too close and then immediately snap a picture or take a recording of the event, get the license plate, cross-reference it, send them a friendly email reminding them of the law, just all as a script that you don't do. I mean, it's passive aggressive and petty, and that's how I was feeling at the time, because it's scary when cars don't go too close. But like, this tech is all here for everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you could do you could build a system that could have a 360 degree scan all around you. Take, like, I have the Ricoh Theta camera has got a Wi-Fi in it, right? And so this can go right to the phone, and I can use an open source program to take all that data. So I could use that to identify objects in a 360 degree panorama, which is kind of like what, you know like Waymo and, you know, Tesla do, you know, their cars. You know, Waymo uses LiDAR, and Tesla uses a bunch of cameras that would say, that's a car, that's a car, that's a car. He uses some radar to get depth data, but you could put a bike version of this that
so
could show you.
So I get very utopian when I think about how these devices are making it more and more possible for us to feel more connected, for everybody to achieve more. If you have an idea, it can help the world instantly overnight and all this stuff. We also have just-in-time delivery and management. However, what scares me is 100 years from now, the possibility of society essentially full-on, like, we can't even envision, certainly the planet wouldn't function with the carrying capacity that we have right now, if all of a sudden all electronics stopped working, which that's when you get to those scary scenarios of, you know, every so often, every few tens of thousands of years, the magnetic poles just flip. And during that time, there's very little shielding to keep the sun's, you know, solar flares from knocking out electronics left and right. And it could be the kind of thing that, you know, let's say war is at an all-time low, which it is, and, you know, famine's at an all-time low, which it is, but then all of a sudden, just boom, everything stops working. Obviously, we can't feed everybody and do everything without the electronics. Does that scare you at all?
I mean, should it scare me more or less than the idea of something, you know, solar flare taking out an electrical grid now? I mean, I would say that our ability to handle disruption has improved dramatically. You know, I would say that we're better able, but then again, you have things. I mean, you hope for that. Let's say there was a recent event that was in the news, and this is inside info, kind of a crisis sort of situation, and the police radio shut down because once they hit a 500 radio limit.
Right.
Nobody could talk, you know, and so stuff like that happens. And I think I worry about those situations when you have one agency or one group that says this is a solution we have to use. And people say if you have no opportunity to point out weaknesses or solutions, you know, there's a lot of criticism, let's say, of hedge funds, like, oh, hedge funds, they're evil. They prey upon like companies failing or whatever. No, they're there making bets and exposing risks. Hedge funds win when people have risks that they haven't addressed or haven't accounted for. And so, you know,
and they send important signals about
exactly.
About impending bubbles and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And it just side note, kind of, you know, there's a lawsuit right now where there's some cities and states are like trying to sue the oil companies saying like, hey, you know, climate change is affecting us, blah, blah, blah. Like, we should be compensated for this, need to pay for this because you didn't disclose this or do this, whatever. It's being fought because the oil company is like, hey, you know, when you did bond issues and you were asked if climate change affected your city or was a risk and you said no, that's either fraud, you know,
right.
Because you knew there was risk or not. And that's the thing that gets into in an institutional level where you have kind of cross interests and one interest protect our environment, do this, the other interest make money, so, you know, finance the city. Did that tangent make any connection at all, or am I too out there on that?
No. I mean, look, we're all out on the limb. It was just fun seeing you dance the farthest.
Well, I mean, it's we've talked about, like, you know, because when we talk about, are we afraid of this? Like, no, I'm not afraid of these things are robust. But then we talk about, well, if we nationalize the internet, we put it all under control to lock it down and make sure it's secure. That's when I get scared, because our fear of short-term, smaller disruptions opens up to a much bigger when that whole thing collapses, you can't put it back together.
I'm fond of thinking about, there's a lot you could do when you make a system rigid, but rigid things break. Whereas, if you have a more evolutionary take of it, with highly diverse and each, financial institution trying to probe the weaknesses of the other one so that you have some form of equilibrium.
Yeah. We went through, we had... In a span of 10 years from 2000 to 2010, two humongous economic collapses. You had the internet bubble bursting. Trillions of dollars were lost. Trillions of dollars were lost. People lost jobs. It was very, very devastating. Yet we didn't have to start homeless camps. We didn't start soup kitchens. We didn't have that. 2008, we had the financial crisis there. And there's arguments we say that we handled it completely wrong as far as what should have been done. But the net result is our system was so big and robust that, there are a lot of people affected, millions of people affected by that. But we didn't reach depression level hysteria. And again, somebody who's dealing with hardship or somebody lost their house or whatever, I do not mean to downplay that at all. At all. And I don't want to appear unsympathetic and all that.
No, but we're looking at the bigger picture.
And it's not to say like platters, oh yeah, no, we weathered that one the best we could. No, we did not. But the system is robust and whatnot.
I lived my life through both of those and it did not really touch me, which is not to say that it didn't touch other people, but it's like it didn't affect core bedrock things to the point where now all of a sudden it's like, well, I had this career trajectory for myself and now I'm gonna till the fields.
So the positive sort of stuff, but to show you the potential. So Google has a spinoff called Verily, and they're doing really neat stuff with large data sets. Now, when you want to take, let's say, 300,000 patient records and you want to look for correlations with certain things, that's an immense amount of data. And anybody remember like the traveling salesman problem and things like this? You understand how complex these things are. It's why you need GPUs and big systems to sort of compute all this data. But they took 300,000 patient records with eye data, looking at the data of what their eye scans of their eyes, and were able to find strong correlations between that and heart disease. And so now they think they have a way just to look at your eye to predict your heart disease risk factor.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
That's amazing.
So, they've done this before of looking at some of the, looking at this sort of data, looking to see if evidence there. When you have machine learning that does this, machines are very good at picking up patterns we don't. It's one of the reasons, like when you're trying to like do image recognition, you want to make sure all of your data sets are clean because, here's an artist rendering of a shark. That should be good. Like, no, there might be things that are sharkiness that humans just don't even notice.
Yeah.
Curvature of the spine, things like this, et cetera. But they looked at eye scans here and, it just looks like a bunch of cells or looks like, vessels. And, it's got what these were showing. Oh, what are we looking at? Prediction of age?
Yeah, so it's able to take this left image here is the original scan
of the eye.
Of the eye. The right side or the middle side here is age. It predicted that this person was 59.1 years old when in actuality they were 57.6 years. It predicted that the patient was a female and she was.
That's amazing that you could tell gender based on correlations of the eyes. I guess
predicting whether they were a smoker. Whether they had, I think that's diabetes. It's had a 6% predicting that they were diabetic and she's not, as well as BMI, body mass index.
Wow. 24.1
prediction to a 26.3 kilogram. What was that? Kilogram?
Kilograms.
Yeah.
BMI, of course, is the most loose one of all those because, a bodybuilder has a higher BMI than somebody who's slightly overweight. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Turns out the data set was only one person in one model. So it's going to be 100% each time. No, but I mean, the way they test these things is brilliant because they put in this is the data, this is the test data, and then correlate until you come back with a model that works. And it's amazing. I mean, that's what it's just doing with eye data. They're starting to get into genomes, and genetics are complicated because we have this idea of like the one gene that controls this. No, it could be five or six genes, and you could have three of those genes and two different genes, and you might have the same effect, because nature is very efficient. So But it's exciting. It's very exciting. On one hand, they're looking at this ability to diagnose. The next steps or steps they're doing now is the ability to treat, to try to predict treatments and stuff on this to say, why don't you try doing this instead? Because we've noticed a correlation there between this data, but we need data.
Yeah. And yet, and it's so funny because at the same time, we're all very sensitive. We're worried about, you know, quote unquote, our data just in the abstract. But at the same time, we sure do like the benefits of people using that research to figure out that
stuff. I think, look, there are other things that get opened up with this, and there are issues on who owns it and how they're able to use it. But the idea that we are going to be able to get good stuff out of it, I think is, I mean, obviously only getting more and more exciting.
Yeah.
Tell you what, also only getting more and more exciting is donating to our Patreon, patreon.com/weirdthing.
I'm glad you brought this up because, you know, I donated last week and it definitely, when I donated again this week, it was more exciting the second time.
Well, and you know, there's a lot of data on that, Brian. try it for yourself, this fun experiment. Go ahead and up your pledge to Weird Things if you are already a Patreon. Or if you want to become one, go ahead and start. And then the next week, up it again and see how you feel. Report all of your findings back to at Schwood on Twitter. And let him know. But in all honesty, go ahead and get our After Things show, which we talk about more businessy kind of stuff. And also make sure that you make this an appointment for us each and every week to talk about science and pseudoscience and everything in between.
Gentlemen, you know, I may be wearing a shirt of Starman cruising around space in his Tesla. I may be wearing a SpaceX cap, and I may be a big fan of the space thing. But I want you to turn your eyes not up, but down. Down, I say, to the oceans.
To beneath the – yeah, man, go be having your head in the clouds and your – Tesla's in the clouds. Get your feet on the ground. You got to think of look deep inside, beneath yourself.
There's a lot of talk about asteroid mining, and I think it's going to be cool. You know, they're like, it's like you hit that headline, you know, one asteroid, you know, loaded with nickel could solve the whole, you know, economic crisis because it could, you know, be worth $20 trillion. It's like, you know what $20 trillion worth of nickel does? Makes the price of nickel fall to the floor, you know? I mean, well, it's that's like aluminum.
Yeah, exactly. Aluminum used to be a very rare delicacy or a treat, a fancy it was a sign of wealth and power.
That
Napoleon.
You would eat like
there was a story, and I'm sure it's more than, you know, apocryphal, but it was that like one of the prize things, the collections of Napoleon spoons, like was this Napoleon spoon owned by Napoleon that was made of aluminum. It was like, ooh, aluminum is lightweight, like, ooh, because the ability to get that much aluminum, whatever, it's just you have to go through an aluminum extraction involves, you know, you got to take bauxite, tons of electricity, whatever. It's a very sophisticated process to do this. But then there was a time when a centerpiece display at Tomorrowland at Disneyland was a telescope made from aluminum, right? Ooh, look at this, kids. One day, but then aluminum, they figured out how to mass produce it. Now it's, you know, we wrap our garbage in it. We don't care. So it's like, not like, you know, if we could produce enough aluminum, we've solved the world economic problems. No, we these markets adjust to price. But that being said, is this it?
I think this is an aluminum spoon. This is a thread on a website. But a lot of people have been able to find fancy looking pure aluminum spoons in their attics.
So asteroid mining, I think, is interesting. I think is a very interesting idea. I mean, I think that it's possible and it could be useful. But one of the things that isn't as sexy but is growing, and there's millions and millions, billions of dollars now actually being directed to this effort, ocean floor mining.
Ocean floor mining.
Mm-hmm. Huh. And we do this now, of course, with the oil rigs. We go and we take an oil rig because, you know, if you drill a hole, that hole goes deep enough, you find a big thing of oil and you go pump it out. But that's a lot different than actually trying to, you know, literally dig up undersea, find stuff, pull it out. So there's a great article, Giant Robots Are the Future of Underwater Mining. This is from Popular Mechanics. And they show some massive, humongous, large, gigantic, I need more adjectives here, underwater robots. If you look at they're huge.
Oh my God, how badass do these things look?
Yeah.
And I guess they're are people inside, or why would you have people?
Robots.
You would remote control everything, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's all remote. They control it from surface ships. So these things look like you know, the most evil Transformers collection you've ever seen.
Yeah.
They've got these different for boring, whatever. So these are massive, massive machines that just sit on the floor of the ocean to start digging stuff up. And again, environmental concerns. Yes, we understand that. But come on, this is really, really cool. you know, all the stuff. Think of all the stuff we found on land. There's way more of that in the ocean. Way more.
Now, I wonder how that gets regulated? Like, does it get regulated?
Well, I guess international waters, right? You just go, I mean, if you think about it, you could have an undersea version of Deadwood. We're out in the middle of international waters. There's a camp because they found all the gold there, and these boats are just floating around. Anyone could come in and be like, hey, get your robots away from my robots. This is my territory. And then it's like, then you have to fight with your giant robots on the undersea to break them. And you're like, oh, is yours broken now? Good. Now I'm still digging.
Well, that sounds like an argument to mine not in international waters.
I mean, not if you want to watch an awesome HBO series on it.
I don't want to kill Brian's HBO series. I don't want to kill that. There are certain like global agreements and stuff regarding, you know, like you can't go like, hey, we're going to go put our nuclear power plant in the middle of the ocean because nobody cares. We can't put, you know, we're not going to start sending factories. There are laws against, you know, international laws that sort of would kill your HBO series, that story point element. But we could say we passed a law and those laws are gone.
That's so, right. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, there is a hesitation. No, there is certainly, there are areas where you can state claims and things like that to be sure. But, you know, it's not totally wild frontier, but in some ways it is. But you also have a lot of like where people extend, they have like, this is our border and this is the area in which we claim. And that's, you know, one of the things we're having a problem in Asia is because, you know, territorial claims of a certain large nation there, extending them out into trying to basically annex the other nations there in a very slow shadow war. Not naming names. but it's exciting. I mean, it's this neat idea that you know, there are massive machines down there and looking for more resources and stuff. And just you look at these things and thinking like how big they are. It's these huge robots just digging underneath.
Yeah, this one's probably
and also the idea that they are waterproof. Not only waterproof, but they're designed to be in among the most hostile environments on Earth.
Yeah,
right.
Like the surrounded ocean floor. By, you know, the as the Dothraki call it, the poison sea. Right, all this corrosive minerals all in it, and it's just down there tearing stuff up.
And they're tearing up the floor that creates more corrosive elements. Like, I mean, these are like hardcore machines. They're amazing.
So give you an example of some of the things here. We need to figure out what's down there. So the first scout mission called the Abyss Autonomous Underwater Vehicle, it's a scout machine rather, it's a torpedo-shaped craft 13 feet long and weighing just under a ton. AUVs, autonomous underwater vehicles, like Abyss, are autonomous, free-roaming, and can carry out missions following a pre-programmed plan. Abyss hits its maximum depth at 30,000 feet and can be in action for a full 24 hours. So 6 miles down. So it has surveying tools, sonar and stuff, maps the contours, da-da-da. And then they start getting into what they call their work class. These are the much larger vehicles. They have, like, the Cutter, a 250-ton auxiliary cutter built by British company Soil Machine Dynamics. So it's they used it originally for how they would lay underwater cables. So they have to remember they dig the plows for underwater you know, cable. So basically it's built off of sort of the same sort of, you know, how you would make something like that work. And they just get into the bigger things, like 310-ton machines.
310 tons.
Yeah, it's a lot.
They're pretty badass.
They can go like a half mile an hour. But, I mean, that's...
It's pretty, you know, I mean, for what it's doing, pretty fast.
Well, I guess normal operations are much slower, but it's like, yeah, it's like driving a bulldozer by remote control. Wow. Visibility can be bad if there are black smokers adjacent to the area or near field turbidity from the mining. Yeah. I guess you kick up a bunch of stuff. It's hard to see.
So. Yeah, but I wonder, like, it probably using some kind of advanced sonar stuff, too, I would imagine, where it could kind of make a visual landscape out of it.
So I'm just reading this here. Like, yeah, they have dredgers, giant vacuums, things like this. They show the support craft that uses to put this thing on there. God, I bet, you know, James Cameron's got his finger hovering on the buy now button. Very, very, very cool stuff. So just an exciting thing to think about, a new frontier that we're opening up or getting more into. I mean, we've actually been doing seafloor mining for thousands of years, you know, with little bathyspheres or diving bells, things like this. You read about some of these shipwrecks, like when the Spanish ships, you know, these crashed and sank with, you know, tons of gold and, you know, resources on board. They would actually try recovering operations, even though these are several hundred feet of water, by, you know, 100 feet of water or so. Some of these, they would put people down there, these sort of diving bells, and it was generally slaves, and there was a high rate of death from doing that. But, you know, that's how you did, you know, that's how you did your scuba diving back then, was, all right, we're going to take a barrel, we're going to cut off the bottom half, we're going to put some weights on it, we're going to stick your head in the barrel, it's going to go down. The air is going to compress as you do this. We don't know why, but anyhow,
we're gonna by hand be pumping air down to you. Hope we pump fast enough. Tug real hard.
Well, like the ones that were deep, but if you couldn't, you just mechanically could. That was one of the reasons why we invented the combustion engine, or the drive towards the steam engine. The combustion was because just trying to generate enough power to move air. Because once you have to move your air through, you know, 100 feet of hose, it just
needs enough pressure to even get down there. Good God! Oof. What horrifying.
No. People. So, do we want to do this quick where is Roadster?
No, yeah, tell me about it. I don't know what this is.
So basically, I've seen that, I think that this, or maybe some other website, what they did is they just basically, it's a website somebody created for fun where they calculated the trajectory of the Tesla Roadster that's now in space. So if you go to where is Roadster, it will show you where this is. And I don't know if you can zoom in on that or not, because where it is, it's not particularly helpful because it just overlaps. It looks like it's back on Earth.
It animates. There you go. You see the Roadster, and its trajectory is just sort of drifting out from Earth's orbit to Mars's orbit, and then past it, and then back on in.
Yep. And there is a non-zero chance the Roadster may crash into Earth, well into our atmosphere, and burn up.
That'd be amazing.
Just so you know. It reminds me of, like, the Perry Bible Fellowship comic where there's like two astronauts, and one's like, "Oh, I can't make it. I'm falling," and he falls, you know, into the Earth's atmosphere, and he turns into this bright, shiny, you know, bright, you know, flash of light. And this girl holds out her tongue and goes, "Oh, look, the first snowflake of the season," and catches one of the ashes.
Makes a screwed up guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Gosh, who enabled that person?
He's a weird dude. I love him. I actually found out when I was in, Tokyo in Japan.
Which is background. Justin was the editor of the Syracuse.
I went to school. I was a coworker with Nick Gerwich, who does Perry Bible Fellowship. And have you ever heard of the phrase weeb? If I say weeb, do either of you know what I am saying?
I assume. No, but I feel it's angry. Short for like is it weeboo or what is? Tell me about the word weeb.
No. Well, you know something of it. But it is a slang for usually a non-Asian person who is really into Asian culture.
Yeah.
Right. It is derived from a Perry Bible Fellowship comic that is totally nonsense. It is just a comic where there's a guy saying, "Hey," like in a very businessy thing, "if we waste any more time with Weeaboo, we'll be bankrupt." And then the rest of the crowd just starts saying, "Oh, did I just hear Weeaboo?" And they're like paddling him in the final thing. It has nothing to do with Japan or Japanese culture or Asian culture at all. Like, no matter what. But for whatever reason, it was co-opted apparently through 4chan to mean this thing. So this all happened.
Really? That's amazing.
So I didn't know if Nick knew that. So I DM'd him and I'm like, "Dude, do you know that the Weeaboo comic became this like whole thing?" And he's like, he is aware of it, but he has no idea. And he's blown away that anybody would want to make anything like that of us. It is a nonsense word. It's literally just a word he made up that'd be funny that people were chanting if they were paddling somebody.
Sounds like somebody wants to play Weeaboo.
No!
Gentlemen, I have a have to depart at 1, but medical checkup. Apparently, you're supposed to go every now and then and have them tell you you're healthy or not. So who knew? I wonder what time it is.
I mean, could it be time for Journey Quest?
Previously on
Journey Quest!
The bunker. Come to my bunker.
There's actually a children's hospital right up ahead on the right.
Hey, by the way,
boom! He pops up with a gun. Greetings from Bryce Vegas.
Meet us. Meet us at the border of Bryce Vegas, and we can bring an end to these hostilities because we know what happened in the bunker.
Thanks again to Steven, who makes those recaps.
Yeah. So last we heard, the boys were on the road to Bryce Vegas with Good Clone Bryce. Was that the name?
Yeah.
Good Bryce, I think Good it Bryce. Was.
Good Bryce. And a nuclear weapon. And they've been sent on a mission to blow up Bryce, who has now become basically like...
But also we are booked for a big wrestling extravaganza. We've got a lot going on.
We're going to try to Dave him.
Yeah. We'll feel it out. I mean, so first of all, Justin, do you want to just hang out and wait and see if the message gets to him? Or should we just, I guess, let's head into town. And if he wants to meet us at the border, he'll already be there. Otherwise, I say we just march on in and maintain our cover story. We're just here to do a wrestling show.
Listen, here's what we do. Here's, all right, team meeting.
Yeah. Good, Bryce.
We are, there's no way that this is bad publicity. So we are just going to march into town and we're going to say, hopefully either we're either met by some part of his security or whatever. Right. We're keeping Good Clone Bryce secret.
Oh, yeah. Do me a favor real quick. Put on this mustache and this jaunty hat. There you go. Yeah. Tilt it sideways. And if you could, you know, there you go. So to act.
No, that's actually how Bryce really looks, though.
Sunglasses, too?
There you go. Sunglasses work. Yeah. Okay, great.
That looks exactly like Bryce, though.
It's fine. I'm sure it'll work.
Hey, your manager here, guys. I know you forgot about me, but that's okay. You know, when they gave you the nuclear weapon, they actually built a secret compartment on the RV.
Oh, hey, we could stick him in there, but also make him wear this mustache.
With some nuclear weapon.
Yeah, you cozy up with the nuke.
It was a smaller nuke than we thought. You know, they had these old ideas about big nuclear weapons. It's like a suitcase nuke. And it really, it's not even like a suitcase nuke. It's like your grandmother's suitcase that she carried her hats and the little mirror and the, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Like a nuclear weapon. I think it was a grandmother's suitcase, to be honest.
It's the size of one of those portable phonograph record players, right?
What you're telling me is that we have a nuclear weapon just rattling around in a compartment that's way too big for it.
We put some foam peanuts next to it. Jeez.
All right. So here, I scoop out 7 or 8 handfuls of the foam peanuts. I was like, in you go, Good Bryce. Also, make sure to wear this mustache.
Okay. Well, why do I need the mustache?
Because, man, like, you never know. What if they're psychic? What if they have x-ray eyes?
So I can be thrown into a compartment?
What if they scan you with some kind of x-ray thing and they're like, there's a man in there. Who is it? Oh, it's definitely not Bryce Castillo.
Go, oh, no, that's just Matt Mustache.
Exactly. Here, wear this shirt that says my name is Matt Mustache.
Your new name is Matt Mustache. And if anybody asks you what your catchphrase is, you just say it's mustache time.
By the way, we are like still like 300 miles away from Bryce Vegas.
We're not even close, it's hours away.
Just bucket. You can never be too safe, man.
They're going to be after us, man. Okay. Hey, Matty M, go ahead and get into the Matt Mobile. That's in the basement of our car.
All right.
Now I notice though, there's like it's the situation of where the secret compartment is. It's between the bathroom and the master bedroom, and there's been peepholes on either side of that.
Okay, we're gonna just ignore that is the case.
A lot of VHS tapes in there too, Bryce. A lot of VHS tapes in there.
That's weird. All right,
let's set it up. I press play on the tape deck and I say, let's roll.
It's recorded over a Chuck Berry concert. Don't know what that means.
It's great. So we get moving as fast as we can and head on to Bryce Vegas. Justin, we got a few hours to kill. Are there any plans that we should be making?
Hey, look, there's an In-N-Out up ahead.
Don't be tempted. Don't be tempted. Hey, look at. Hey, I hold up my pinky to Justin and say, no side quests. No side quests.
No side quests. Let's go.
Hey guys, manager here. We need to fill up the gas tank. Turns out there's an In-N-Out. Now, as you know, In-N-Out, which is a family-owned company which is devoted to the religious principles, has managed to survive the the apocalypse, maintain the highest quality food, whatever that makes them great about that. They still put the little religious inscriptions underneath it. But I'm like, you know what? Listen, who's going to survive these things? But a bunch of people devoted their religion, their God, and part of that is their service demand, which means In-N-Out. Do you guys want to get some?
I look Justin in the eye and just as slightly as possible to give the
slightest
shake.
Manager cracks the window and you can smell the French fries.
You know what? I go and I open up the nuke bin and I pull out more packing peanuts and I hop inside next to Bryce.
Can I have a burger?
We have to talk.
It's like, I'm not going to be tempted by side quests. All right, so I get back out.
No. I drag Brian out. He's not getting into the compartment. I tell Maddie Mustache to stay where he is.
Hey, it's Mustache time.
and then I tell the manager, hey, look, if we have to refill as fast as you possibly can. Get two burgers to go.
Yes,
we are going to stay here. We have
also cheese. No. Don't let him put special sauce. No mayo in there.
You don't even like the special sauce.
No. Shut up, Maddie Mush.
Maddie Mush.
You can hear him through the RV. By the way, he can actually. You realize that like there's a little hatch there. He could climb out if he wanted to. There's little vents he can watch. You see these eyes just peering down at you, just staring at you.
This is not a good compartment.
I was like, hey, this is really convenient. I bet I could fit a few French fries through. You want fries?
I'd like a whole meal.
Okay, a whole meal's worth of fries. Double order fries.
And a straw.
Yeah, exactly.
This is too much like a side quest. Whatever. Just get stuff. Bring it back.
All right, manager comes back out with bags full of In-N-Out. Here you go, guys. I got everything there.
Okay. Let's go.
It's Mustache time.
We get back into the bus. We start driving along, and you're eating the food, and then you notice it's delicious.
Oh, my gosh. It's so good. This might be even better than that jerky that we had.
Now I know what all those Californians are talking about all the time.
Like all those Californias.
All right, so, yeah, Brian, and you carry along. You're like, man, it's one of those like, yeah, we had In-N-Out. It was delicious. Meanwhile, let's carry on to Bryce Vegas.
Okay.
We continue on to Bryce Vegas, and I tell
pause,
Brian, right,
I pause a moment to reflect with my mouth full. You know, I really am glad we did that one side quest. I know we said no side quest, but that was a pretty good one.
I patiently waited until Brian's finished chewing.
Now you travel along towards Bryce Vegas. I see a billboard, right? And you ignore the billboard because you're like, no, we're trying to get there. We're trying to make time. We're not reading billboards. Then you see another billboard. It's some attraction where they managed to buy a bunch. And now it's painted on the roof of a barn that's angled towards you. They paint it on rocks. It's like they're really trying to get your attention for this.
I glance over to the side to see if it's an advertisement for the thing. And if it is, I'm going to maybe insist that we do this side quest.
It's Club Diamond Shop.
Club Diamond.
And it's got the logo.
Ignore it.
You drive and you see your faces next to it. Official merchandise.
All right. I say, Justin, you realize like this is like South of the Border. Did you ever go to South of the Border?
Do I remember South of the Border? Of course I know what South of the Border is. I used to drive from Fort Lauderdale to Syracuse. I've seen both ends of that entire sprawl a million times.
So what if it's like that, but it's about us? We get here.
You literally said 5 seconds ago, no side quest.
You
made
pinky
me
promise.
Square, well, no I just side quest. Since then, you are on 1.25 side quests. It's the only words that have come out of your mouth.
Let's just see it in as we let's keep it. Let's see if it gets more impressive.
New billboard featuring the Modern Rogue collection.
I reach into the
licensed
mustache bin.
Official Modern Rogue collection.
I grab two more mustaches and I put one of myself and the other one I put over Justin's existing mustache. I was like, we might be famous here if we stop. I'm not saying we're gonna stop.
Oh my God. You see bright lights over the horizon. Bright lights. big parking lot, and I'm talking something the size of like a Super Walmart. Super Walmart, painted Night Attack yellow. It's got all sorts of neon. It's got a bunch of neon signs from all the different shows. There's even a Weird Things thing here. Weird Things merchandise. All this crazy stuff there, right?
Hey, Justin, I say now our main quest.
Two inflatable Brian's and Justin's out front wavering in the wind.
Justin, maybe
that's it. I slam my hand on the console. Listen, we're going to do this side quest. However, you're following my lead, and this is the tune. We are inspectors from Bryce Vegas looking to find out who owns and who is operating this store. We're poking around. We're looking to find out who these people are. We're not disclosing who we are. My name is Alexei, and you're Jean-Pierre. He's Matt Mustache. We're all rolling in together.
All right, and so
though you both also have mustaches.
Yes.
Okay.
Of course we do. We don't want to get recognized.
It's mustache time.
I pass out white lab coats, and luckily I've already picked up some hard hats and safety goggles and a clipboard for everyone.
Great. Does Bryce have a clipboard, or is he still?
Am I allowed to have a clipboard?
You're allowed to have a clipboard, but you have to write on it. My name is Matt Mustache.
Okay. So you get out of the RV, you pull in the parking lot. The parking lot's it's a little late; it's empty, but the lights are on.
What time is it?
It's like 11:30 at night.
Ooh, okay.
You go walk up to the door, see the lights on with the door, and you grab the door. Door's locked. Mm.
That's a fire code.
And there's a sign that says "Closed for restocking."
I knock very loudly on the door.
Nobody answers.
I kick the door.
The door gets kicked.
Okay, I rev up my chainsaw hand and just kind of lightly try to jimmy that lock with it a little bit.
Jean-Pierre, yeah. That's not code. Probably take this as a sign that this is not a side inspection for us.
I press T and select 10 hours and wait until morning when it wakes up, when it's daylight.
Oh, you see a guy with a mop in the back.
Oh, I tap on the window and wave my chainsaw hand, then realize that's awkward.
He's friendly, so he waves back.
I knock and kind of point at the door, and then...
He walks forward. He's got like a janitor set of keys, unlocks, holds up. Gentlemen, I'm sorry, but the store is closed, but you can have these stickers, and they're Brian and Justin stickers, and gives you some stickers.
Diamond
Club forever.
All right. Yeah. Hold on. Sir. My name is Alexei. This is Jean-Pierre. Matt Mustache. His catchphrase is "It's mustache time."
It's mustache time.
Have anybody ever told you look like Tom Merritt?
The time for merit gazing is over. We are inspectors from Bryce Vegas. We're here to make sure that all of your tax information is in order. Who is the proprietor of this establishment?
Well, it's actually owned by a consortium.
What is that? Just so we can get that for our records.
Diamond Club Enterprises International Conglomerated. Incorporated, LLC.
Is your manager available?
No, he'll be back in the morning, though.
So it's just you here?
There's no manager.
I mean, not right now. I'm just cleaning up the place.
Great.
Restock.
Well,
who is your manager?
Phil?
Well, listen.
Do you have Phil's number? Can we call him right now?
I would give you his number, but cell phone service hasn't really worked since, I don't know, the apocalypse.
All right, this is a good point. Listen up. Count your lucky stars that Phil's not here, because we're going to do this inspection.
Man, you look familiar.
Well, I have...
This is Dan Benjamin,
were you
everybody.
On Queer Eye?
And Andrew Zarian.
I explain in no uncertain terms that this inspection is long overdue, and our orders were to come shut the place down. But if you could just let us do our inspection, we'll be out of your hair, and you'll be back in business.
Listen, come on in, have a look around. It's fine. It opens up the door for you, flips on the lights, it's all bright. And, like, you walk through, the first thing you see is, like, night attack shot glasses, right? You know, die in a fire flasks, right?
This all looks great, but as I look at the merchandise, I try to figure out, are these people worshiping our old podcast from the before times, or are they new fans from our White Hot Fire wrestling show? Like,
also, AKA, do they know we're alive?
Yeah.
And who licensed this stuff?
That's not your catchphrase. That's not your catchphrase, man.
When you say we, what do you mean we?
That's Lenny license. Who licensed this stuff? Catchphrase.
Who licensed this stuff?
So
no, he wears a beanie.
Looking at the types of thing, does it look like they're lionizing an ancient story of us, or are they current fans of our current endeavors?
I don't know how to even begin to answer that question.
Well, like, for example, is there any wrestling gear or anything that depicts our wrestling
matches?
Oh, I
don't think anybody knows that you guys are the wrestlers.
Oh.
Yeah.
Remember, that was the secret? You used
nominations. Yeah, okay, we have not done a podcast since the apocalypse, so nobody who listened to us would know what we are. However, we do know the fact that there apparently has been a correlation of people who survived the apocalypse with fans of our show.
Yeah.
That, you know, we're having a 5-for-1 sale in Justin Robert Young comedy albums.
5-for-1.
5-for-1.
It's the same one.
Oops.
Okay. I go to the back. I try to find an office where there might be some paperwork that would give us a clue about who's running this thing.
You go back into the office, you find an office, and like the guy's like, sure, whatever. Act like you own the place.
Yeah, you did sort of just walk out of the middle of a conversation.
Yeah, I'm going to
be minding my business here.
I go to talk to the janitor while Brian rifles through all the ownership paperwork.
Sure.
All right, so I go to talk to the guy like, hey, yeah, just I know this is a little weird. You know, I'm sorry for that, buddy. Hey, he's just your old pal, Alexei, the tax officer here. You know, listen, man, bosses, am I right? They got me out here humping tax laws, you know, in the middle of nowhere. Not to say this is the middle of nowhere, but I mean, where's anywhere? Am I right? Anyway, when did you start working here, and who pays you?
I got my job 5 years ago. Well, it wasn't the Club Diamond Shop then. It was, you know, it was actually a Super Walmart. And I would say, like, I started the Club Diamond Shop. I think we started that about 3 months ago, 4 months ago.
I yell from the office. I was like, "What? Well, where'd you get that idea? Also, do you have the keys to this filing cabinet?"
Should be unlocked.
Okay, but where'd you get the idea?
I just work here.
Do you remember when the day that it was decided to go ahead and not make it a Super Walmart and have good items at low prices instead of just a bunch of memorabilia for some dumbass podcast and no one's ever heard of? I laughed too loud.
You know what it was, the management, they owned a souvenir tchotchke factory. They used to make all this stuff for something called South of the Border. And, turns out they're big fans, you know, the whole, everybody worked there and listened to the show, listened to all the other podcasts, you know, they liked weird things. Couldn't stand that Andrew Mann guy, but you know, who cares? Anyhow, point is they're big fans. The apocalypse happened and there was some sort of catastrophe in the factory apparently. And apparently like they were trapped for like a week, 2 weeks. The only thing they had was the soothing voices of these two guys to keep them comfortable because somebody had recorded all of them and played them back for them. And they decided that what they needed to do is, if they ever made their way out of there, is they needed to share this with everybody else. So they turned the factory into producing this merchandise, producing this. They said they had an agreement with Brian and Justin to do this. So who am I to question this? They took over the Super Walmart and turned it into what you see, Club Diamond Shop.
I returned from the office wearing one of those hats with two beers and a straw that goes in the mouth, but it has pictures of Brian and Justin on it. And I say,
actually, it has little plastic Brian and Justin's on each beer, like holding each beer to your hat. Like
there,
little
there you go. and I said, bad news, guys. There's just a bunch of paperwork in there.
Did you read any of it?
Did I read any of it?
Yeah.
You know That's what? Hold on, I'll be right back. I go back. I go back to read the paperwork. What do I see, Andrew?
You see a lot of orders for a lot of like them, like, you know, submitting requests to the factory to produce stuff. Not a lot of sales receipts.
Oh, damn.
A lot of sales receipts.
Good reading.
I look for their sales tax certificate and tear it up.
I asked the janitor, "Hey, is this place, what's the foot traffic like these days? Like pretty busy, pretty not busy, pretty crazy?"
You know, we had a couple people here last week.
What did they look like?
People.
Okay.
That checks out.
All right. I turn to Justin and I say this is a bad dungeon. Let's go back on the road.
Yeah. So you said cell service doesn't work, right? You know, there's no way we can get in touch. We can't like send up a flare. Like if somebody was robbing the place, like let's say somebody was legitimately just robbing this place blind.
Phil looks around nervously, grabs his wallet, takes out his prize bucks, hands them to you.
No, slowly, friend, don't worry.
Starts handing you t-shirts.
Listen. I understand that came off a little heavy. No one's getting robbed.
And now he's running away and he's out the door. Well. You're by yourself.
All right.
So we are robbing this place.
Yes.
Like right
now. Great. So I look for, I go to the sporting goods section. I get some Brian and Justin branded shotguns. And I put them all in Matt Mustache's hands. Cool. I'm like, carry all these, also these ammo. And then I go and I take a Night Attack brand camping fuel and I begin to pour it all over the establishment. And then,
Wait a minute. We're going to destroy it.
I mean, what's the point? We got the guns.
You're destroying the only, like,
these people love us.
They love you.
They probably
There's
think
an
we're
entire
dead.
Section of Justin and Brian's cardboard standees.
Okay, No. We are not lighting this place on fire. I hit the register. How much do I find in there?
There's nothing. Just some lint and some lifesavers and a couple certs.
All right,
I eat the certs and I say, Brian, we're leaving.
I realize that a lot of this stuff we can sell as merchandise once we have our big
your big match.
Our big match. So I grab a bunch of the standees of me and Justin.
That's what you get over
standees.
There's actually a Justin and Brian Airstream trailer that you could load it up into and attach to the back of the RV.
All right,
we fill that thing up. We're not doing the standees. We're not selling the standees. You know how this works.
Okay. Okay, but you never know. Maybe there's some kind of wacky thing where we need to look like an army of us.
Action figures, triple extra large t-shirts. These are the things that move.
No, but if we, I'm just saying we might get into a battle and we might need to confuse the enemy. But and then just by setting up all these standees and they're all like, I don't know which one of you to shoot.
They're going to shoot the one that's not smiling and not moving.
Probably the one that has the chainsaw for a hand. Unlike the other ones. Okay.
Flat.
I throw away the standees, except for one.
We load up all the merch, and we do it. Do we write any note to the owner?
Yes.
There's some stationery with your faces on it.
Great. We autograph a bunch of those, signing them saying, you're welcome, Brian and Justin.
And then I write, taxes came due.
And I actually number a good 200 of them. I take a Brian and Justin Polaroid.
More merchandise to sell?
No, I mean, we're giving it to them in exchange. This is fair compensation for all the stuff that
we
took.
Hold on, you wanted to burn down their establishment 5 seconds ago.
You convinced me. I saw the light. So
okay. y'all get back in the RV?
Yeah, yeah, let's go. Yeah.
You get out of the RV, and the RV starts to pull away. Phil, the janitor, meanwhile, is off hiding behind the corner, pulls out a cell phone, opens it up,
bitch.
And says, oh, these things still don't work. They like RV's heading down. You guys are no more bad dungeons. No more. And that's just straight on. You're not going to let anything distract you. Not anything distract you. Not even the signs, the lit up neon signs that say Juryland Bushwood, the greatest amusement park on the planet.
No, no.
5 miles ahead.
No, 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 no.
Come on, Justin. I want to go to Brush Gardens.
Absolutely not.
Brush Gardens. Yeah, Brush and Scenic Brush Gardens.
No, we are going to Bryce Vegas. And here's the plan. We're going to be met by somebody at the border, and we are going to either say, hey, look, this was just to raise interest in our big wrestling match. I know you understand publicity. And we either go and meet with Bryce and we Dave him, or we are immediately launching into open warfare, which we can end at any time with our nuclear weapon.
Hopefully after our
Hall
show.
Hall of Presidents featuring Robo Justin as all the different presidents.
No, I pulled down all the shades, and no one is able to see outside.
Julian Bryan's greatest roller coaster ever.
Oh. I punch Brian in the kidney as hard as I can so he can't see out of anything. He's just lying on the floor in pain.
Oh, man. They're playing a movie, Modern Rogue One.
Justin's House of Self-Loathing. No, we're not going to go there and do that.
No.
It's a really long ride. Really long, really, really dark.
All right. I begrudgingly decide that if we have a few hours, I get some shut-eye. Because I think we got a clear plan of attack.
Well, you pass there. You're on your way. Everything is fine. You even see a billboard that says answers to everything here. Turn this way. End this quest right now.
Ignore it.
Justin's not a big Douglas Adams fan.
It's a giant ball of twine. It would be like some idiot going to say 42 and fart.
You pass by there and you hear 42.
Nailed it.
You keep going, and then you go over a hill. All the interesting things always happen right over hills, right over ridges. You see bright lights. You see lasers shooting in the sky. Remember how bright Las Vegas was?
Yeah.
Nothing. Nothing compared to this.
Wow.
Okay. You're like, oh my God, is it? You wake up, Brian, like, is it morning already? Is it morning? And you're like, oh, no, that's just Bryce Vegas. Lights, lasers, like they used to have a laser in the Rio that shot out over like the desert highway, but it was like a hazard or something.
Yeah.
They don't care about that in Bryce Vegas. There are like 1,000 lasers lighting up the sky. And in fact, from this particular location, you can see the laser lighting up the moon with Bryce's face.
Oh.
He's cackling and laughing. You can't really hear him.
I elbow Matt Mustache, and I was like, study all that. Study those moves. You're going to have to look exactly like him. You're going to have to become him, except for good.
Do we see anybody on the road impeding our entrance?
There's tour buses heading back and forth.
Okay, but no official presence.
Well, you're not there yet. I mean, again, it's really bright. You're miles and miles and miles away.
Oh, yeah. No, just checking. All right. Well, let's, Brian, suit up. Who licensed this?
Okay. Ready? Who licensed this? Hey, do you want to get your power armor on?
I equip power armor.
Okay. I ride on Justin's back as he runs alongside the last few miles up.
So, all of a sudden, you see a fleet out of nowhere police cars follow you. Well,
we react with no fear, egging them on.
Although I do lean over and I said, and whisper into Justin's ear, I bet you wish we had a bunch of standees of ourselves to confuse them.
Bunch of police cars pull in front of you.
I snidely answer back, no.
Oh, goody.
Bunch of police cars pull in front of you.
All right.
Yeah. Right? You guys, you go slow? Do you go fast? What do you do?
I mean, if they're coming alongside, I wave at them with my chainsaw hand.
One of them rolls down the window.
Yeah. Okay, great. I'm like, hey, we have a gig here. We're just loading in.
He thumbs up.
He's great. Like,
we know. It's sold out.
We're an escort.
Wait. They're an escort?
Yeah.
Wait, are you here for our safety?
In a matter of speaking.
Great. And so we head farther into Bryce Vegas.
Is the security guard that takes a boxer to the boxing ring there for their safety? Does the job stop when they get in the ring and they're then the answer is yes.
Yeah, sure. Cool. All right.
I took a course in philosophy and I asked these questions.
It's very literal.
We've got a great community college program here in Bryce Vegas.
Let's head on into town. How close to town are we now?
2 years of maternity leave.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, 2 years of parental leave, maternity leave. That, they give us that. It's great here.
Oh, that's great. Hey, what's
awesome.
The...
Let's move on. We're going to the fight.
Yeah, driving. We're doing good. We're good. What do you want the billboard? I just got a phone call from the boss. Our cell phone signal works here, by the way. What do you want the billboard to say?
Hey, Bryce, if you're not a filthy coward, come to the fight.
Yeah, that's what it says.
Okay, they want it to say, if you're not a filthy coward, come to the fight.
No, specifically, Bryce. Say, Bryce colon.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking
to. The leader of Bryce Vegas. Yes. Yeah.
Yes, do I just talk? Yes, that's, quote, your name, Bryce. If you're not a filthy coward, come to the fight.
Great, yeah. Great.
Says he'll be there. Can't wait.
Awesome.
Lots of love.
We keep on going.
And what is your marquee name, by the way? Sorry, one more question.
Justin, do we want to give our real names? You want to just call out?
I mean, we are Licensed Larry and Matt Mustache.
I gotta take my mustache off.
Yeah. No, we're staking the gimmick, and I put another mustache on my fake mustache that I already had. And then I stare right in the cop's face and go, "It's mustache time."
I listen to hear whether or not Bryce is outraged from inside his box. Giggling.
We'll find out next time on Journey Quest.
A lot of progress, guys.
I've got a bolt. I'm gonna say do picks. I'm gonna say my pick, and then I'm gonna move on.
Okay,
fair enough. I've been watching Alter Carbon. I enjoy it. I think it's a good show. The visuals are amazing. Really, really well done visuals on that. You kind of want it to be sort of a bigger sort of show or bigger sort of messages to, I would say, to an extent, but still, I'm finding it very enjoyable.
Right, yeah, on. Look, I think it's at its best when you understand that it's pulp sci-fi, right? And enjoy it for the visceral pulp sci-fi-ness of it, and it's not Peter F. Hamilton, like, telling you a greater truth about society.
Yeah, there are things where you're like, okay, like, the part of the plot line is somebody who's in the future, but then they wake up like 250 years from then, but like their world hasn't changed that much. Everything's sort of the same, which seems sort of counter to kind of like, who, I don't know, the future is really going to be involved. But some of the things you're like, this feels like 100 years from now, not like 700 years from now. And then things are very, very static. There's a lot of issues of the futurism of, I'm like, well, this is sort of, would it really be like that or not? But who, I don't know. But it also, it's still an entertaining show.
Yeah.
And really
sexy
good themes.
People, crazy guns, it's Altered Carbon. Have some fun.
Right. My pick is an article written by Justin Robert Young and John Teasdale for President's Day.
That's right.
In which they pit all, 45 presidents against each other. It speculates, what if the moment they put that hand on the Bible at inauguration, poof, they go into a game of PUBG, of PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, and in detail. But just play with this thought experiment for a bit. Make your bet about who lasts the longest and who is the ultimate victor, and then buckle in for this ride. It's a fun bit of satire.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really, really proud of it. It was amazing to work with John Cheese, who is the editor to The Modern Rogue. He is great, and it's just a super fun article. John did so much of the work on it, so he really gets the majority of the credit. It's awesome, and I'm so excited that we were able to find a home with it on The Modern Rogue, which I just think is like a supernova that everybody needs to read every day. Because it is so fun.
Right on.
You got to pick Justin?
Dan Wally, is the article more detailed than the stream they did a month ago? Absolutely. In fact, we left a lot of stuff out of the stream because we're anticipating it getting published on President's Day. So go ahead and if you – it is a perfect companion.
Hey, and share it. This is the kind of article and this is the kind of day that I don't
today,
know. I can
today.
Imagine.
Share it now. Share it today.
Yeah. Share it.
Post it on a Reddit. Find 10 Reddits to post it to.
Here, an example of Reddits you could post it to. Politics. Player Unknown Battlegrounds Reddit. just any of those that you might think would be a cool thing where people would like to read it. It again, we have no idea how much we meticulously researched the capabilities of all that and the reasoning that went behind it. If you want to companion to it on the Politics podcast, we did go through kind of the more methodology of how we statted everybody and why we statted and the decisions that we made, including, you know, there are a lot of people in that thought experiment that never saw an automatic weapon, that don't know what a vehicle is. How would they react? We made very specific decisions about that, and we went more in detail on why we made those decisions in the podcast.
And that's your January 4th, 2018 episode of Politics.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, look, ICU's got a URL for a Reddit post on the PUBG Reddit.
Oh, weird.
It would be crazy if organically people were to give fans of that game a tremendous crowdsourced material.
Yeah. I have a pick real quick. I think I've talked about it before, and I think the reason I didn't talk about it in too much detail was because at the time, it was very difficult to play. You know, it was across three different generations of video game consoles, and they were not always very common or easy to find. Can't always find prints of it. But it's on. It went on Steam about a year ago now, and it is what I think is probably one of my favorite science fiction / kind of supernatural story. It is the Zero Escape series, specifically Zero Escape the Nonary Games, which is a collection of the first two of this three-game series. Each game, you sort of wake up and are finding yourself in a killing game, and it mixes escape room sort of puzzles with visual novel sorts of storytelling and choices. And what I think it does really well across all three games is that it continues to ramp up the stakes of what is at play, you know, trying to survive, but also trying to save the people that you're with, the people that you're paired with, people outside of the games, people who have no idea that the games are happening. And I don't even want to get into any more detail about it because it's a very cool, like it is its own rabbit hole to go down, and every little discovery is really well thought out and considered. And there's tons of pseudoscience and fake science and actual just hullabaloo.
Yeah, but it's got like internal logic that sticks.
Yeah, it does. And it sticks between all three of these games, and this collection in particular that came out, the Nonary Games collection on Steam. And I think you can find this on some of the consoles. Went back to the first two games and upgraded them. So like the first game, 999, is really cool, but it's a very tough game to play and experience all of because at the time it didn't really have like what you would consider a flowchart for a visual novel game where your choices are there. So you would have to play from the beginning all the way over and over again.
Oh, wow.
And make all your decisions. So I think that's something that's new. I think that game got like voice acting. This is from Spike Chunsoft, who do really good localization and really good English dubbing. I recommend it wholeheartedly. If any of that sounded good, plus the puzzling is good. The escape room elements are actually really good. It has also good concrete logic in the way you play it. So
awesome.
That's Zero Escape, the Nonary Games. Check it out.
Boom.
Well, Andrew's not here to say goodbye.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. When it comes to that, it's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.